Evening all, it's the Bell and Spurling Show. Spurling's not here, it's just me. He's away again. I don't know what's happening. I think they've caught him. I think they've finally caught up with him. Coming up on the show, I'm going to be talking about some of the songs that we've sort of gone on from last week, of these songs that influenced us. I'm going to play some stuff from the 80s, 90s. There's a couple of 70s ones thrown in. What about old Ed Sheeran? He's being sued by the Marvin Gaye estate. I think it's the second time this happened to him, isn't it? I don't think he writes the songs. Does he get somebody else to write?
I'm gonna add some bottom so that the dancers just won't hide.
We'll be talking about the football as well. Arsenal throwing it away, don't you think? Oh, you Tottenham fans are happy, but there again, you're not much better, are you? Went over West Ham last night. A little bit unlucky. Thought we put up a decent fight. I know they had all the ball, Liverpool, but we're giving it a go. Chelsea. Oh, dearie me. Ta-da. Here we go. It's all coming up on the Bell and Spurling Show without Spurling. Just the bell. Oh, yeah. Coronation as well next week. Probably talk about that next Thursday. I'm a royalist, Spurling isn't. Then what's the matter with him? What's the matter with the fella? I know it's gone a bit wrong in the last few years, but come on. Here we go. Evening all, it's your Bell and Spurling Show on this wonderful, wonderful Thursday evening. Johnny Spurling's not here, they have caught up with him. I mean, he's been on the run for so long now that they finally found him. I mean, he's not easy to miss, really. I mean, you know, he's around and he's, you know, everybody knows Johnny Spurling and they finally got him. No, he's in Spain. Do you know what, he goes to Spain a lot. He's over there every sort of month. I'm sure he's a baggage handler. Something like that. He might be a taxi driver at the airport or something. I don't know. Something's happening. He's backwards and forwards to Spain. Make what you will of that. No, he is working on an album out there, and he has to keep going over. So you've got me today. So normally we'll start off with, you know, the Bell and Spurling Show with him, Johnny Spurling, and him, Martin Bell. Today it's just Martin Bell. So I'm going to have a little chat with you about some of the things that are in the news. There's not too much that's great in the news at the moment, if I'm honest. I was having a little flick through and I thought, really? Why don't we just play some good music? And I'll talk about some of the songs that not influenced me, but you know those sort of pinpoints in your life where you just go, that song there, I remember what I was doing. I remember what I was wearing. I remember what the fashion was. You know, you sort of roughly remember your age. I'm pretty good with sort of remembering stuff like that. I've got a good memory. I can't remember what happened yesterday. Do you know what? I was on the phone to somebody earlier. I can't remember their name. But I was phoned up, like, to cancel an appointment for something. And they said, what's your postcode? And I went, I've got it. It's in my head. But, I mean, that's mad. I couldn't remember my postcode. I had other postcodes from previous houses in my head. And it just wouldn't come out. I said, give me a minute. But I can remember everything about my childhood. I can remember, you know, it's strange. I can remember about my schooling and the early days of fashion. But I do pinpoint stuff. You know, kids don't really have fashion now, do they? If you think about it, they don't really have fashion. It just blends into obscurity. Whereas we had, you know, there was teddy boys, there was mods, there was skinheads, there were punks. there were goths, and then you had the casuals all through that sort of 80s period, and then you had the new romantics. That was a great one. It was just a little bit before my time, but I was heading into it, you know. Couldn't really get involved in the makeup, although some would say I did. But anyway, let's leave that as a story for something else. But I just, you know, there were sort of times when you sort of jumped around different fashions. You remember that? You'd hang around with this little crowd because they were mods. And then, because you changed your fashion, you had to go and stand with another crowd, which I just found really mad. But there's certain songs as well that when you hear them, you go, I've got to play that again. And you never get tired of playing it. You play it backwards and forwards. You just, it's really weird how you just sort of go. Do you remember cassettes? Myself and Sperling were talking about cassettes last week. There is a resurgence for cassettes and vinyl at the moment. But with the old tape, you used to have to rewind it. Rewind it. If you had it at the start of the, you know, your tape, you could rewind it and go, right, just hit play again. And you just keep doing it. Be driving along. I mean, I remember sort of some of these songs I'm going to play you is when I just first passed my test. I was 17 years of age. And you'd line up your songs that you really loved. And you'd have it on a special tape. You get in the car and go, yeah, here we go. Right. You got your Lacoste t-shirt on. Your Pringle jumper. Right. Your Farrah's. And you're just going to play some fantastic songs. With the hope that, you know, you pick up one of your mates, or you pick up a girl, you know, you pick your girlfriend up, and it just, life felt so good, didn't it? You know, when you get, there's certain songs that make you feel so good. Do you know what, I'm gonna start with this one, actually. I was going to go with something else. I was going to start talking about the Ed Sheeran and the Marvin Gaye situation with the court case, but I'll come back to that, because I do sing a lot of Marvin Gaye songs at the live gigs, of which, starting from tomorrow, I have to do 7 gigs in 4 days, in the next 4 days. So I should really be saving my voice, if I'm honest. But I do remember this. Okay, I'm going to play you a track, because I got a car. It's a funny story, really. Because I was always into sports cars. And at the age of 16, I was working in the city. I had a record deal at 16, but it wasn't, you know, one of those proper record deals where they're going to give you some money. So I didn't really get signed to a major label till I was 19 or 20, to Mickey Most's label, Rack Records. But at 16, I worked in the city for an American bank. And I just loved sports cars, and I loved Triumph TR6s. And I thought, I'm going to save up for one. So I saved up since I was 16. And I got to 17, and I passed my test. And it's mad, really. I borrowed a bit more money to go and buy this TR6. Bright red, white wall tyres, 2.5 litre injection, convertible. God knows what I was doing. And the guy brought it round. I saw it in Chigwell, and he was parked outside the Prince of Wales pub, which is no longer there now. It's a very posh block of flats at the top of Manor Road. And this guy had this TR6, and I was looking through the window, and he came out, he said, do you want to buy it? And I said, oh, yeah. I'm only 16, but can you bring it round and show my dad? He brought it round at night time, it was dark, and my dad went out and looked at it. He opened up the engine, he lifted up the bonnet, and the fella revved it, and oil spurted out everywhere. It was all over the engine, and I said, and my dad said, you can't buy that. I said, I want it. He said, you can't buy it. I said, I want it. I'm having it. Because it was bright red, and it looked fantastic. Cut long story short, we bid him down on it. I bought the car, and I was still 16. It stayed in the garage till I passed my test. And I finally got it out when I passed my test, drove it for a couple of days. It kept running out of petrol because it was so juicy. You remember the old times you used to have to go to the garage, fill the can up for about £1 or something then, pour it in, and I couldn't afford it. And then we got an MOT on it. The guy said, it's terrible. It's rotten underneath. You're going to have to scrap it. That's how bad it was. So I was absolutely gutted. I've still got the pictures of it because it was such a wonderful looking car. But you know when you line up your tape machine, and it had a tape player in it, and this was one of the first songs that would come on, and I just couldn't wait to get somebody in the passenger seat and go, right, we get the roof off, we're going to drive along and just have a listen to this start of this song.
Thank you.
What a record, eh? What a band. What just an amazing band, Earth, Wind & Fire. And you know what? There's quite a few tracks. I mean, there's a few tracks that I do live. We do September, which is great. Gets the whole place going. There's certain songs that just lift you, and you know where you were when you was listening to it. Doesn't it? I listen to that, and I feel like it's the summer. I don't know what it is. I just feel... I played that going down to the south of France, I think, when I was sort of 19. And it's a great feel-good song. And what a band, the Phoenix Brass section, the horn section there, that went on to play with Phil Collins on some of those early albums, which I'm going to come to. I'm going to play a Phil Collins track as well, which is a pinpoint in my life. But you know what? I wanted to play this one because this sort of reminded me of, I think the TR6 got scrapped. It went to scrap and I lost half the money and it was terrible. And then I went through an array of sports cars. I went and bought one of those, the smaller one, the little Spitfire, which was like a death trap. And then I went and bought this the Triumph Stag, which they were fortunes now, but they were great because you'd get two people in the back. It was convertible, you had this sort of T-bar roof type thing, but it was an even bigger engine. I bought this green one off a mate of mine. It went wrong the first night, by the way. Apparently the tappets went, but we had that fixed, and it was a green Triumph Stag with the 3.5 litre Rover engine. Anyone knows a bit about sports cars, it had the bonnet bulge. And you know what? I remember playing this song. I found this song, I heard it, and just thought it was one of those that you just kept rewinding backwards and forwards. Now, he had a great voice, and most of the people will remember Robert Palmer for the videos with the girls in the background with the slick black hair, and he looked fantastic. And sadly, you know, he died very young. He died in Paris in a hotel. And he was a real different type of pop star, if you like. He didn't, you know, he didn't have an image as such. You know, I mean, George Michael was talking about when he became such a massive star. And he knew that when he went to America, the likes of Whitney, Madonna, Prince and Michael Jackson, they were the other four big selling artists of that year. I think we're probably talking about sort of, I don't know, 87, 88, that sort of era. And when he went to the States, he had to create an image. That's why he put on the biker jacket, the glasses, and they give it that rock and roll look, the BSA jacket. But he said, up until then, I didn't have anything that was identifiable to me. But Robert Palmer didn't have that. But he just had something different about him. It was great when he created Power Station with the two or three of the boys out of Duran Duran. But this song, I don't know what it was, I heard it, and it got me, and I thought, I've got to keep playing it in the car. So the Triumph Stag had this quite a lot, and it's just a great song. I hope you enjoy it.
The fight to make ends meet keeps a man up on his feet. Holding down his job, trying to show he can't be bored. Who takes every kind of people to make what life's about, yeah. Kind of people.
just like an addictive melody, you know. It's just a great groove. The bass line is brilliant, you know. It's just one of those. I just couldn't stop playing it. And, you know, he came up with some great songs, Robert Palmer, and he did cover a lot of Marvin Gaye stuff. I think he was sort of listened to it. He was obviously influenced massively by Marvin. And, you know, he'd done some brilliant versions of Marvin Gaye songs. And I just found it quite strange at the moment that we've got this situation going on with Ed Sheeran and the Marvin Gaye estate. Now, we did have this, I think Marvin Gaye's estate, you know, which is his family sort of thing, that sued, it might have been Pharrell Williams and Robin Thicke, was it, for Blurred Lines? I'm sure they sued him for that, which was, for, as soon as I heard that song, I thought that is a rip. They've taken, or at least given the sample. If you don't know, normally if you take a sample of somebody's song, you have to get clearance. You know, there's a couple of times we've asked for clearance on certain ones. But what you don't realise is you have to give them all of the royalties on the PRS. So every it's PRS, so every time it gets played on the radio or whatever, you have to give them the royalties. Even you've taken a 30-second sample of someone's song. I think, whatever he called now, is it P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, whatever he's called now, Sean, whatever he's, Combs, you know what, it changes it every week. Now, I think he had to get clearance from Sting for Every Breath You Take. Now, you might get a situation where they say, look, we'll split it down the middle, we'll give you 50-50. I've got an idea that Sting said, no, I'm taking the lot. I think he did. I'm almost certain. But this situation with Marvin Gaye and Ed Sheeran, I'm not really having that one. They've put it on him that the chord progression is similar. And I'm not sure. I'm with Ed on this one, but this one I'm going to play you now. The Marvin Gaye one is the one that they sued, and I think they won for the Blurred Lines track. And it's just a great groove.
I was too nervous to really get down.
groove, isn't it? Cowbell. Ah, it's great. What a great groove. You know, it just makes you feel, as soon as it kicks in, you sort of, I can feel you. You got your neck popping, haven't you? Your neck's popping in and out. I can feel it. It's just how it works. Marvin Gaye was such a shame. I normally open up my gigs with Let's Get It On. And I always say, you know, this is a song by Marvin Gaye. It's what a fantastic artist. We all loved him, apart from his dad, because his dad shot him 6 times, which is just terrible. You know, I know you're going, what? What are you? You can't say that, but it's what happened. At a row with his dad, and boom. I mean, what a tragic, tragic story. But I love it. I mean, What's Going On is probably my go-to song. I've always sung it. Myself and Sperling do it at many of the shows, and it's always been a great song for us. Now, there's certain people that were influenced by Marvin Gaye and, you know, came up with different styles. Now, one of the bands that I got into, the reason why I sort of started in music was when I was about 14, we was into Kick Rail and the Coconuts, who had, you know, they sort of just had something different about them. We used to go out and see them at Hammersmith Odeon, and they were just so stylish. There was something great about it. My best mate Brad, his dad was really into them, and their house was really cool. The furniture was cool. They had a Porsche 928, and everything was cool about the family. You know, they had a couple of pubs in the East End, and we used to go, you know, sort of as kids, we'd sort of hang around out the back of it, and they had a restaurant, and so everything was cool. So we thought, right, we've got to get into Kid Creole and the Coconuts, because Reggie was in the Kid Creole and the Coconuts, and that's what we thought was cool, and they were, and there was something different about them, and we tried to emulate them when we started our band. So we called ourselves Pineapple Party. We had a single out at 16. We played the Hippodrome for 2 nights on the trot, and we were, you know, we tried to be them, but my mates were saying, can't you sing Stool Pigeon? Can't you sing, you know, all these sort of, Annie, I'm Not Your Daddy? But I'm this, you know, 14, 15-year-old kid from Chigwell. I'm not really Kid Creole from New York, you know. It didn't wash. I'm still wearing a Pringle and Lyle and Scott and stuff like that. And a sort of Burberry roll neck. So it didn't really work. And I'm playing a guitar that was twice the size of me. But real strange in... I don't know, in the last 10 years, or longer than that actually, last 15 years, I become friends with Kid Creole. August Darnell is his real name is. And I used to have this polo event. Some people might remember the Duke of Essex Polo. I used to own this polo event in Epping. And I got Kid Creole, that an agent said to me, you can get Kid Creole and the Coconuts to come and play. I was like, you're joking. Yeah, I'll have them. So I got him to come and play, and I sung that night as well, and he was like, man, I love your voice. And so we became friends. And he said, listen, I'd love to write a song with you. And I just thought, wow, this is amazing. So we did start to write a couple of songs together. And then I was getting married. And he said, well, I'll play at your wedding. What? He said, yeah, I'll play at your wedding. So he did. He turned up at my wedding and with the Coconuts and Bongo Eddie. Nobody knew at my wedding that he was coming. My wife didn't even know. We had the wedding at my house in Buckersteel, in a big marquee at the back, and we kept him at the side of the house. I had to get a couple of flights because he now sort of lives in between Sweden and Hawaii, so figure that one out. One of the Coconuts was in New York. The other two were actually in London, and Bongo Eddie lived in Manchester then, so I had to sort of drag them from here, there and everywhere and get a couple of flights and stuff. But nonetheless, it was something to remember, because I got up on the stage and my wife said, well, why is there bongos there? And I said, oh, have you got that Prince lookalike from Spain? I said, yeah, that's it. I've got, you know, the bongos are for Sheila Rees. There's a Sheila Rees lookalike and this guy. And there was a couple of mic stands at the side, you know, for the backing. And she went, oh, you've got a Prince look. I said, yes, that's it. So I get up on the stage. I think this is actually on my YouTube account, actually. And I get up on the stage and I say, right, Lane Jim, I said, look, nobody knows this, but even my wife doesn't know. And she's standing at the front with her wedding dress and everywhere. Everyone's looking up at me. We had a couple of 100 people there, and suddenly I just went, but I was influenced by this band. you know, when I was 14 years of age, and it's the reason why we started in music and called ourselves Pineapple Party. And all the way from New York City, here they are, Kid Creole and the Coconuts. Can you imagine her face? It's great. Track Kid Creole and the Coconuts, and just so stylish, you know. Just wearing the big zoot suits and the big hats, and that's how he, honestly, that's how he is, that's how he lives. He's like that all the time. I, you know, like I said, a few meetings with him. We went into London and we met up with a record company. We was going to do some stuff together, and that's how he comes out. Just, I remember him sort of. We was in I don't know, Kentish town, and we sat at the back, and he brought out some orange juice and some chips, a lot of the, you know, like crisps, and he went, "I'll always remember, we're sitting in the sun, drinking orange juice and kettle chips." It just seems the coolest man ever. He still is the coolest man. I'm probably going to see him 1st of June, I think, 1st or 2nd of June, and he's playing at the Boysdale. If you get a chance to see Kid Creole and the Coconuts, it's such a cool show. Please go and do it. Next track, I want to talk about... I was never a big album buyer. Johnny Sperling, massive album buyer. You know, could tell you what year records came out, how many they sold, what the position of the chart was, and, you know, who played bass on it and stuff like that. But I was never a big album buyer. I loved the song. I thought, right, I'll go and buy that. I didn't really buy albums as such. But there was two albums that sort of kicked around in the mid-80s that I absolutely loved. So I'm probably thinking that's going to be, just thinking, I'm pinpointing my age again and what fashion I was into. So I'm looking at this, I'm thinking it's 1985 area, which would be, yeah, okay. So there was Terence Trent D'Arby came out, massive pop star, great pop stars, great. Do you remember The Tube? It used to be on Friday night on Channel 4. We don't have shows like that anymore. It's such a shame, you know, Top of the Pops has gone. We love Top of the Pops. Myself and Sperling were fortunate enough to do Top of the Pops twice, and, you know, it's just a great, great show, and The Tube was brilliant on Friday night with Paulie Yates. And it was just brilliant. And it exposed so many bands. There were so many bands that launched on there. I think Bon Jovi played on there, and everyone was like, wow, what's this? You know, we'd sort of not really seen that sort of soft rock before come over here and played live. But I remember Terence Trent D'Arby playing and just thinking, what a great pop star. Now, I've played his tracks before on here, so I'm gonna go with a little bit of his track. And then I'm going to go into the other album that I got at the same time by Tears for Fears, because it just had a sound, had a great sound about it. So I'm going to play a little bit of Terence. This is the one, and strangely enough, when I was talking about Cars earlier, this was one of the ones that was lined up on my tape. I had a bit of Earth, Wind and Fire, a bit of Terence Trent D'Arby, a bit of George Michael. You had to have Careless Whisper, especially if you was taking the girl out for a drink. You have a bit of... You got that in the car, haven't you, when you're driving with the roof down. The fact that I couldn't afford the petrol is another matter. But let's just have a little bit of the blast of this one, because this is another make-you-feel-good song.
Sweetheart, listen. I know the last few things haven't been good for the both of us, and I've caused you a lot of grief. But put those bags down, okay? Before you make a decision like that, please just listen to me, because I don't want you to leave. I definitely don't want you to leave. Just hear me out.
Great track, great pop star. So that was the sort of album, you know, I was into, the Terence Trent D'Arby album, but also there was just another song that I just loved. Well, the album I loved, and they were, even though they don't talk that much, because I don't think they particularly like each other. And Roland Ozabel, I just think had something great about him. He's a bit unique, and I was very lucky to go and see Tears for Fears a few years ago. They played in, what was it, Chelmsford or Colchester? It was one of those two. And I took the kids as well. and ABC were supporting them. So I knew a few people in the band and stuff, and we had a wonderful time. And I just thought I'd play this one because it's not the one that sort of people get to hear all the time, but it's a great one. After this, it used to go into another piece of music, which was just so good. Tears of Fears and a little bit of Terence Trent D'Arby there. Just, they were the two albums that I continually played, and so many good songs on it, you know. You just, like, I'm just reliving some of the songs that you knew what you was wearing, you knew the fashion, you knew where you was hanging about. You know, the places that you used to go, you knew you was hanging around with, you probably knew what girl you was going out with or fella you were going out with. I always pinpoint stuff like that. I'm going to go back a little bit before that because it was the coming out of the sort of 1980-1981 period, where there was just a massive fashion situation. I was quite young then, and I was still going over West End with my mate. He was a lot taller than me, my mate Charlie. He was 2 years older than me. He was about 6'2" then, with a hairy chest. He looked like a bear. And I was tiny. And my dad said, well, if Charlie's taking you, you know, he can look after you. And I go, okay, so we'll go over West Ham. And I wanted to be a skinhead. Everyone over there was a skinhead. You used to wear the old green jacket or the Harrington jacket, you know, the black jacket with a sort of red bit of tartan inside. And, you know, they would have Stay Press and stuff like that. And they would be wearing, you know, 10 old Dr. Martin steels. And my feet were size 3. So it was just, I couldn't really be a skinhead. And my mum wouldn't let me have a crew cut haircut. You know, that's what it was called then. It was called a crew cut. And I wasn't allowed. We didn't have clippers then. I'm sure that they just used to cut it with scissors. We used to go down to David Jerome at Hainel and go, please just cut it really short. And my mum would go mad. So I was never really allowed to be a proper skinhead. So I was quite pleased when it switched from the skinheads to the mod situation. It came out of this sort of skinhead, rude boy mod era. And the two bands that were sort of jumping around at the time, the one that you could probably say was legitimate was the Specials, because it you know, they looked the part, and they were doing very, very different sort of stuff. Whereas Madness came along, and Madness were completely different. They was quite commercial, but there was just something brilliant about it, and it sold it to everybody. Whereas the Specials sort of felt like it had come out of the punk era, which you had to be a certain person to be a punk, you know, to walk around with a safety pin in your nose and a straight jacket and tartan trousers where they were tied together in the knees. I remember going to Carnaby Street and you'd just stare at punks, but you'd have to be careful. You think, oh God, they're so mad. It was like an alien, you know, and Mohicans and earrings. And it was another one. I wasn't allowed an earring. I think eventually I pierced it at school with a compass, which, it's terrible, isn't it, really? But I did. Or your mate would do it. He'd put a bit of ice on it, wouldn't they? He'd put a bit of ice on it and try and stick a needle through it. But there was, I think the Specials really were that sort of legitimate sort of punk mod band coming out of that era. But Madness sold it to all of us. And there was just great songs. Baggy Trousers was probably the pinpoint of that era. That you just done the dance, you done the Madness dance. But for me, this was my favourite song, because I don't know what it is. I think it's because it's got some minor chords in it, and it was just something different from Madness, and I absolutely love it. Thank you. What a record. What a record. Just one of the best. And we did say last week, myself and Johnny Sperling, we were very lucky. We supported Madness in the Marbella Ballroom. Oh, I don't know, 2007, something like that, maybe. That's on YouTube as well. Go on the Bell and Sperling, put in Bell and Sperling, Madness, Marbella, something like that. You'll get it. You get a little clip of us. I think we had about 8,000 people in the ball ring that night. It was probably one of the best gigs we've done, because Madness was such a big part of our childhood. And I think everybody goes up to Suggs and Chaz Smash and all the boys and always go, "You were such a big part of my childhood." I think we were with them that night. We went to the after party at Nikki Beach, and people just keep coming up saying the same thing. And it's true. They just were. They were there, weren't they? They were it. Somebody else I wanted to play a little bit about was Phil Collins, because another pinpoint in my life was, I think we'd just got a record deal at Mickey Mouse at Rack Studios, and me and my mate, my best mate Brady, was in the band with me, the drummer then. We had two girlfriends, and one of the girlfriends said, "Look, I've got my uncle runs this place on Saint Tropez Beach where we can stay there for 2 weeks." And it was like, well, what is it? What's Saint Tropez Beach, you know? And he's got a little boat we can use it while we're there, little 15-foot speedboat. And we're going, yeah, okay, great. Little did I know, it was like a mobile home on the beach. I'd never been to South of France before. And I actually go there every year now. I've just booked to go there again. I'm going back to exactly the same place that I went to in 1987. It's a little bit more expensive now than it was then. But you've got famous places along the beach there, like Club 55 and places like that. And Nikki Beach. You've got all these sort of beach clubs just around the other side. It's called Pampelone Beach, just around the other side from Saint-Tropez Port, which is like a really old-looking port. But these massive super yachts in there, just stinking of wealth, but we go down there and we come home with not a penny in our pocket. But we went down there in 1987. We just finished recording at Rack Studios, and I just thought, that's it, I'm a pop star, I've made it. We just done 3 tracks, and we get in this little Renault Turbo that my mate has borrowed off of his dad, and we got 2 suitcases on the roof crammed in this Renault Turbo, little Renault 5 Turbo, and me and my girlfriend are at the back, and my mate Brad's driving, his girlfriend's in the front, and we drive all the way through the night. It's the longest drive, and driving down the south of France, and we get down there, and we did. It was one of the most memorable times ever. We had 2 weeks in this tin can on the sand. I mean, they're all aircon now, and they're, you know, all mod cons. It's a bit, at the time, it was like a mobile home on the beach. I think it was like 97 degrees every day for 2 weeks. Got burnt to a cinder, as you used to. You used to cover yourself in baby oil, didn't you? Or factor 2. When you were young, it was factor 2. but some of the songs that we played on the way down there, Phil Collins was just a massive album, face value. I think it was No Jackets Required. There was just great songs on there. But it was years later that I attempted singing this song. And I don't think this is actually on this album, but this was a song that I just thought was great. And it was a duet. And I thought, it's sad what our Phil is at the moment. As we all know, he's not particularly well. But I thought I'd just have a little blast of this one, because it's a wonderful, beautiful song.
You call me from the room in your hotel. All full of romance for someone that you met. And telling me how sorry you were leaving so soon, and that you miss me sometimes when you're alone in your room. Do I feel lonely too? I can't go on
Talking over the ending, but we're nearly at the end of the show.
Yes, for now we'll go living separate lives.
Bit like me and Sperling tonight. He's in Spain, I'm here, separate lives. It's been wonderful doing the show tonight, sort of walking back through memory lane, giving you some of the songs that were pinpoints of my life. That was one of them. Phil Collins, just a great artist, with Marilyn Martin. I've really enjoyed it tonight. It's been great talking about some of the old lads. We'll be back next Thursday. Bell and Sperling. Have a good night, everybody.